Hello and welcome back to Burger Bounce, a podcast by Steak and Honour. Today, it's episode 4 of series 3, and I'm chatting to Susanna Watson from Meadows Kitchen and Deli on Mill Road and Newnham. We hear all about Susanna's humble beginnings growing up on a dairy farm in Ireland, right up to now where she owns the two places in Cambridge and everything in between, including her love for cheese and her experience in the industry. There's some really lovely stories. Apologies that the audio is a little bit up and down in this episode. We were recording in Susanna's busy cafe. So anyway, I hope you enjoy. Good morning, Susanna.
Morning.
Nice to see you. How are you doing?
Really good. Thanks for inviting me to come on.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. This series, series 3, is actually all female
people. Oh, that's
so
exciting.
Yeah, I really wanted to do one that was just all women in Cambridge in different aspects of the industry. So it's turned out really well. So I'm really excited about that. So we're going to start where I start with all the guests, which is when we talk about childhood food memories. So where did you grow up, and what sort of things were you kind of all eating around the table as a child?
So I grew up in Ireland, which people find
surprising. Did you really? Yes, yeah. I had no idea.
So my mum is English, and she's a very well-spoken English lady, and I used to always get teased as a child for being this little English girl, but I was born and grew up in Ireland.
Wow.
So food in Ireland in the 80s and 90s was very simple, very good, very delicious, but very simple. So very much meat and two veg.
Yeah.
But I grew up on a farm, so I was really lucky to be very, very close to food. It was a dairy farm, so our milk came straight from the milk.
Literally from the cow.
Well, not quite from the cow, but from the parlour.
Right, so okay.
We go out with a bucket of, like, nice clean white bucket that my mum kept on the side, and we go and open the tap on the milk tank before the lorry came, and we got our milk that way.
That's so cool.
And actually, my mum's parents were also dairy farmers in Somerset.
So there's already a link, like a link here through to the cheese,
yeah,
which we'll obviously come to later, but yeah. I had no idea about that. That's really, really interesting. So
yeah,
you've always had
a little bit coincidental, but it's by no means not
a surprise.
So we had milk straight from the farm. All of our meat kind of came from a massive chest freezer where you know beef, young beef cattle were sent to the butchers, put in the freezer. And they have like a little bit of bartering system going on with other local farmers. So we were pretty connected to food, I would say. And then my mum actually was sort of less excited by food, but my two grannies were both like post-war grannies, obsessed with food.
Yeah.
So my Irish granny grew loads of stuff. We followed quite a seasonal pattern with her. She grew French beans, she had an amazing fruit cage where she grew raspberries and gooseberries and all stuff like that. Never strawberries, they never seemed to work, but masses of fruit nonetheless.
That's so lovely. It is a romantic view, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm reading these books with my daughter at the moment, Millie Molly Mandy they're called, and they're written in the 30s. I read them as a child, but they grow everything. So in the book, when they talk about food, it's like they'll go into the garden and literally take whatever's in the garden at that time, and it is such a kind of an old-fashioned way. It's not even an old-fashioned way, it's what we all should be doing basically, but it seems like an old-fashioned nostalgic way of like growing and eating.
Yeah, it is nostalgic, but it's so kind of basic, like to pick a piece of food out of the ground and like eat it within either minutes or later that evening.
It's a thrill, isn't it?
Yeah. And you can't help be moved by it, whether your life has it that you do that every day or whether it's a real treat and out of the ordinary. It is still quite such a natural thing, so I think it gets everybody really.
Yeah. Did your mum, was she a good cook? Would she cook all your meals?
Yeah, she did cook. Yeah, she was very much a sort of dutiful farmer's wife, but I don't think she loved it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was sort of work for her. So there was less joy, I think. And she also, I think, felt a little bit of pressure from both of my grannies. So my Irish granny, who we lived on the farm, and my granny lived on the farm as well, separate house, but mm-hmm. on the same patch of land. So we would see my grandparents more or less every day. And she would ask you every day if you had enough to eat. And my mum, you know, would hear a percentage of those conversations, and it just annoyed her all the time.
I get that. But you also can see where your granny's coming from. So yeah. I imagine there were times in her life where she didn't have enough to eat.
Absolutely.
And so therefore, that's her main... Yeah. My grandmother was slightly like that. She came from a very working class background in the Northeast, where she had 11, she was one of 11, and they had nothing. So yeah. there would have been times where there was literally nothing in the cupboard, nothing in the house. When we went up to stay with her, there would be constant food. Like, she would bake cakes for us. There would be, you know, just constant. She was in the kitchen all the time, and it was her main goal was to feed.
Yeah.
That was her thing.
It is.
And the memories, just wonderful for me and my cousins and stuff like that. But you can totally see where that, yeah. like, connects.
I know, and I think it's, like, it was an obsession for them. It's completely understandable. Mm. But it just could be a bit much. And particularly for my mum, with her mother, I know that my mum as a teenager really pushed away from food. Mm-hmm. And then she kind of came back to it as a responsible parent with us. Mm-hmm. But my mum's mum was also completely obsessed with food. And they used to drive over and come and see us in summer holidays. And her car, she'd come off the ferry and her car would be full of cake. She'd come to stay with us as a guest, and she'd spent like weeks beforehand
baking
to come over to do like 2 weeks worth of cake and treats which I like was so magical as a kid, because we'd like literally be at the boot of the car going like, what's she got? Yeah. But my mum, I would imagine it now, like,
she probably feels like, a bit I'm doing my best. Yeah. They're fine. Yeah. They're getting fed. But do you remember any of the cakes in particular that were like the one
she
of your
did
favorites?
Like a mean lemon dribble. Yeah, she has all the Mary Berry books, and then she discovered a carrot cake kind of later. That was the more modern version that we probably had as teenagers.
Yeah, I just
it's
love
funny
that.
Actually, when we make cakes like that here, they're always really popular.
So how did you get into... So we established that you grew up on a dairy farm.
Yeah.
So that you were always been around food, very much aware of the journey of food and the whole farm to plate kind of ethos.
Yeah.
So when did you decide, you know what, this is something that I want to do as a career?
Well, that was quite accidental, actually. So I went to uni in Edinburgh and mm-hmm. I studied psychology. And then when I graduated, I came back home and was sort of figuring out what to do and looking at masters. And I was literally at home in the countryside with no money and not lined up a summer job or anything like that. And my friends, quite a lot of them who I've been at school with, had gone to university in Dublin and were maybe either finishing off their uni in Dublin or starting jobs in Dublin. So a lot of them were living in house shares up in Dublin and were saying to me, well, are you coming out, you know, come up and stay this weekend? And I was like, well, I've got no money. And they're like, well, come and, you know, come and get a job, you know, just while you figure it out, you may as well be here rather than staying at home with your parents. So one of my friends said, oh, look, I know somebody who is opening a cheese shop. Do you want to see if I can get you an interview? I was like, oh, yeah. I'd always had jobs, like all my part-time jobs as a teenager through uni. I had always been like in pubs or mm-hmm. waitressing and all that kind of stuff. I was like, yeah, I could work in a cheese shop. Why not? And that was a second shop for a company called Sheridan's Cheesemongers, mm-hmm. who are pretty well known in Ireland now, but they were still fairly young at that point. I think the company was about 10 years old. And I was just really lucky that they were a really dynamic two brothers. And the way they ran their company was really refreshing. They gave everybody like responsibility from day one. And they took us on farm visits. They yeah, just completely kind of enveloped you into a world of cheese and food. And I was hooked really at that point. And yeah, I just wanted, that was over 20 years ago, and I've never had a reason to leave since then. So it was never a plan. It was
a happy accident.
Yeah.
So being with them, did that really influence you kind of moving forward to when, like, having your own business? How you saw that they were, you know, dealt with their staff and all things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was like in my very early 20s at the time, and they weren't actually that much older than me. They were probably like mid 30s. So they just opened up a whole other mm-hmm. world of like who your boss could be mm-hmm. and who you could work for. At that time, I didn't actually spend a huge amount of time working for them. It was less than a year, mm-hmm. but it really stuck with me. And joining all the dots from farming in my childhood that I knew, but with farming with the foods that we were selling in the shop,
yeah,
bringing it all together, it was a massively helpful foundation. But then after that quite short time working for them, I moved back to Edinburgh and I worked for a very well-known Italian deli there called Balbona and Carola.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such a nice stepping stone onwards, because having gone from kind of a cheese specialist to Italian food,
mm-hmm.
where they had a working kitchen, they had a cafe there, they had like 3 or 4 proper Italian home cooks just making amazing
yeah.
food. And this was like early noughties, and it was still pretty cool, like what they were doing. So I worked for them. But then again, I came back to Sheridan's later when I moved to London. So it all sort of followed meandering part.
Yeah. What was it particularly about cheese that just really kind of piqued your interest?
I think it's, first of all, it's delicious.
It's just, I just really like it, that's why.
And I definitely think, there's two reasons why I got the job, I think, with Sheridan's. One, because I was like, you said, you know, that I understood where it came from as a farmer's daughter. But also that I just like, I'm greedy, I love food, I want to know more about it. And I think that those were the two hooks for my manager who was interviewing me at the time. But I think with cheese, there's so much to it. Like whenever I do a tasting with people now, the conversation can go in so many different ways depending on people's interests. So you can get into the nitty gritty of the science of it. You can hear the stories of the individual producers, or even just the sort of backstories of like the heritage of that particular cheese, whether you're talking about cheddar, or whether you're talking about Comté, or whether you're talking about Roquefort. There's, you know, reasons why they all came into being existence, and you know, it's a whole other podcast series.
Yeah, that's like the history of cheese.
But in every conversation, there's a little bit of social history, there's a little bit of agricultural kind of know-how,
or a bit of science,
quite a lot of science actually. And it's, you know, a mixture of microbes and physics and all of these kind of things, and so. I haven't learned all there is to learn about cheese, and I think that's the thing, is that it's just kept
ongoing.
My interest.
Ongoing. And I think being passionate about something, obviously this is something that your employee obviously recognised when you were really young, that if you're passionate about something, you're going to stay on that journey and want to know more and ingest more and like just keep learning about it.
And I think as well that just occupying your thoughts with whether you're designing a menu, to put together those pairings, or even if it's just an on-the-spot conversation with a customer, what they might do at home with that cheese that evening, it just keeps the cogs whirring in my brain the whole time. I've never felt a need to move on and do anything else. So,
but you have kind of expanded. You know, we're sitting in your Mill Road deli cafe at the moment. You've got so much produce here. You know, all looks absolutely amazing. You can spend a small fortune just getting everything. So you've kind of expanded away from just cheese into offering more items. So what was the thought around that? Was it just a natural thing to do?
Well, when I first moved to Cambridge, the idea that I had after leaving London was to to stick with cheese actually and to bring another specialist cheese shop to the city. Mm-hmm. And that was my goal when I started Home Closing, which you might have known market store.
That's right.
And I've just struggled to find an inn. I mean, I'm sure you've had this conversation with Cambridge. It's the way that property works in the city is really confusing, particularly if you don't know the city and you don't know how it works, and you have no business history from anywhere else to bring with you. So there wasn't a way in, basically, into a bricks and mortar establishment. And then after about 2 years of looking, and meanwhile doing markets and food fairs and things.
Did you do Ely?
Yes.
Yeah, you did Ely, didn't you? Yes.
I did Ely as a regular weekly market, and then I do just local fairs. Mill Road Fair was actually always really important for me. Things like that. And then from that, I did do like corporate tastings and things like that, but you know, Ely Market was just once a week, so I always had a little part-time job on the side as well. Anyway, what happened with Meadows was that the property sort of found me. Alison from Bread on a Bike, who you might know, she knew of somebody who happened to have the space in Newnham.
Newnham, that was the first one, yeah.
Yeah, and they wanted to keep it as a commercial shop, but they wanted the right type of shop for the
community.
The community, for the neighbourhood. And I was looking for a space for my business, and I knew that in that location, sort of off the beaten track, it needed to be more than just a specialist cheese shop, otherwise business-wise it just wouldn't work. So we led with cheese, and then we added in sort of things that would be useful around it. But I had actually done some volunteering with Flourish as well in the run-up to opening, so for about 9 months or so before Meadows. I'd been doing one day a week with Collect at Flourish, so I knew that I wanted to bring veg into the shop. And then Katie from Allotment Bakery, sadly not doing that anymore, but her bread was amazing. I wanted to bring her bread in. So it was, there were already, all the pieces were there. So it actually was, it wasn't, it just was quite natural to bring all of those things. And then in between, you know, working in Edinburgh and also moving to Cambridge, I'd spent a long time working in Borough Market in London. So
wonderful.
You know, it wasn't difficult to fill the shelves with all of my favourites. So finding things just came really naturally. And actually, it was great because I get to buy them all and eat them. And quite a lot of what we have here, I specifically chosen things that aren't everywhere in Cambridge.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of my favourite things, really.
And people, if they want them, they have to come to you to get them because of that as well.
Yeah, I mean, some products we've added because they're actually made by local people and you see them more often around Cambridge. So that's nice too. But I think with every independent food shop, if the owners are in it because they're into food, which most of them are, it is a personal collection, so every farm shop you go to, every deli has its idiosyncrasies.
And I think you're even right, any food business or even cafe, restaurant, whatever, you know, if you don't, you have to love your product and what you're selling, else I mean, you don't, but our point of view, and you know, lots of other people's point of view, like, you've got an independent business, you need to love what you're selling and have confidence in your products as well. You know, we still eat our burgers all the time because we genuinely think they're great. And you're like, well, if we think they're great, like, some people won't, and that's fine, but as long as we do, then we're happy to sell them, basically.
Absolutely.
I think it's important to have that pride.
And I mean, there's lots of things that I could add lots of things that we don't do that people ask us for. And either I don't have space for them, or I haven't found one that I've got a kind of hook. You know, for ages we didn't sell harissa, for example, just because I didn't find one that I felt was a great fit. And then just over a year ago, I found the Lemuri one that we do, which was a lockdown project for Sam, who owns that business. And it is so delicious. And I'm just so glad that that was Forever Gap.
Yeah.
And I was always looking. And then the one that I find is just so knockout. I love it. And that's just an example, really. Mm. And in the beginning of Meadows, we didn't sell any meat. We didn't sell any charcuterie. And then I met the guys from Sunday Charcuterie. And
incredible.
I'm not vegetarian, so there was no principle behind us not selling meat before. It's just that I hadn't really found one that I loved.
And this one is the best.
Yeah.
We were just discussing how good the fennel salami was before we started recording.
Yeah,
it's amazing. What's your favourite? I've got two questions for you.
Okay.
Let's see if you can answer them. It might be like Sophie's Choice for you. What's your favourite cheese?
Yeah.
For what? That's the first question. And then we're in the Mill Road store at the moment, which you opened. When did you open here?
Only in March, so it's still very new.
So we're sitting in here now and we're looking at all of the amazing produce here and the jars and the packets. What would you say you love right now? If to buy like one or two products, you'd come in and go, you've got to get that, you've got to get this.
There's a couple. So the harissa I mentioned is a real pet product of mine. I absolutely love it and I can't be without it. We actually logistically couldn't have it for a while and I had to go to London to get it because we didn't have it in shop. The other one that I really love at the moment is the Bold Bean Company. I really feel like the work that they're doing to first of all provide a really delicious product, like you can eat those beans straight from the jar, is amazing. But also the promotion that they do behind it, the recipes, they've got QR codes on the back of every jar to kind of really inspire you to use them, and they're effectively a convenience food. So in a time where everyone's really worried about how much processed food we're eating and trying to get away from that, but you still need the convenience lifestyle wise, they're a really good choice. And I think that we've been through a few like waves of food trends that have actually been quite harmful for both the environment and like the chicken breast in the like 90s and noughties was seen as like a move away from red meat, and that was not a good like the industrialization of that food was really not great. And like similarly, like avocados have got some problems, but beans could be like, if people hooked into beans in the same way as they did with those two products, could turn quite a lot of things around, I think. So I'm kind of getting behind the bean.
I like right this. Now. I'm going to have to buy some now. I think we've had some from here before. I think Leo's bought some. Because I love beans, you know, like a cassoulet type thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's just one of my favourite things.
And they are just, they're a complete food. And they, and also they're a great crop for the planet. So I'm really like, I'm getting behind them. I want to help with the bean movement.
I'll join as well. There'll be just two of us, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
We'll start it off. And cheese, what would you say?
The cheese I've probably sold the most of in terms of volume in all of my years is Conte. So I will always be internally indebted to that cheese. And it is a bit of a desert island cheese as well. It's very versatile, but my actual desert island cheese I think would be Parmigiano. I think it would surprise people probably, because it's kind of seen as a bit of a...
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, I didn't think you were going to say that.
Yeah, it's seen as a kind of staple more than like a treat cheese.
Yeah.
But you can just eat it. No, it is. It's just, if I'm cooking with it, like I'll eat half the block just in nuggets.
Snacking.
Before I've actually grated it or shape whatever I'm meant to be doing with it. Half of it will be gone, so I always have to buy a bit extra. And it does like that umami flavour that it gives to any food. And then actually when I was in Edinburgh with in the Italian deli, you know, the older ladies in the Italian community there would come in and just ask for the rinds, and they'd put the rinds into their soup and everything like that.
Oh, they would, wow, yeah. Really?
So they'd use it almost to make like a stock. So yeah, it's I know it doesn't seem like an obvious choice.
Like an underrated cheese.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously the one that we work with is really delicious. And actually that's the only, there are loads of different Parmigianos, but that's the only producer that I've worked with throughout my entire career. So we stopped that one at Sheridan's, we stopped it at Balben and Corolla, we stopped it at Mons in London, and now I have it here. So I've never worked with a different Parmigiana. So maybe I've just been spoiled by this particular one.
I feel like I'll be getting some of that before I go as well. This is like a theme here. It's just like a shopping list is growing.
It's going to get shopping.
Yeah. What would you say, what are some big lessons you've learned along the way having, you know, you've got two shops now, you know, you've worked in the industry a long time. What do you think are some kind of like takeaways from that?
I think this has been probably the biggest learning period, like the last 2 or 3 years, just with everything that's gone on. And every time I feel rattled by all of the things going on at the moment, whether it's pandemic or the cost of living crisis or whatever is going to happen next, I always sort of have to look back and think of the other times where it felt like a crisis, like financial crisis in 2008, and times when it really felt like our business could be in difficulty. Mm-hmm. And it just kept going, you know. I think, and excuse the pun, but like the appetite for normal natural handmade food that kind of has that nostalgia or has that love that we were talking about, like at the top of the chat, you know. Mm-hmm. When you can kind of feel a connection with people, mm-hmm, through the food, there just seems to be like more and more and more demand for it. And then even the younger generation now, like I'm surprised sometimes by the customers who come in who are, you know, just starting out on their own food journey, like in their 20s, they're just starting to spend their own money on food or learning to cook. They're really interested and really intrigued by all the stories in a way that I don't think my friends were, you know, who didn't work in food.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, that's the biggest lesson, is that just to keep the faith, really.
Yeah.
And to just keep believing that it will continue to
And I, I do think in times of crisis, you know, or when you're feeling at your lowest, that is when people look to, you know, comfort food.
Yeah.
And that can look different for all different people.
Yeah.
Whether it's beans on toast or a broth made with stock that's been boiling for 4 days and whatever that looks like. And I think every single person has that food for themselves.
Yeah.
That makes them instantly feel better, feel comforted. And I think things like the pandemic, when they, you know, people were cooking more because they were at home more, they had the time to cook more, and all of those things. And I think there was a lot of people that were probably eating a lot better during that time.
Yeah.
And then moving out of that actually took that with them.
Yes, absolutely.
And so, and I think even all in the pandemic, you could order them online. Like we had the Click It Local. You were on Click It Local,
yes,
weren't you?
Yes, yeah.
And that was just brilliant. Like, even the fact that you could just go and get stuff delivered to your door. I mean, I know it's kind of all, it's gone now, everything's gone and forgotten, but that time with that kind of little business in Cambridge where you could get stuff just delivered to your door, that really, yeah, like, you may not even have gone out and bought, like, beforehand.
No.
It was really, really special.
Yeah.
And exciting. It's like, oh my God, what can I get today? You know, I can get Chelsea buns from Fitzbillies and my door, or I can get cheese from Meadows, or I can get sourdough from Grain Culture. Like, just being able to kind of pick and choose things that you could bring to your door, I really enjoyed that personally.
Yeah,
well,
I loved it. Whenever I got a delivery from them, as you say, it was like Christmas. It was like unpacking all the treats, and like some from my friends, some from people I hadn't shopped from before, and people I didn't get time to go to see very often, probably because they have the same trading hours.
Exactly. And all of a sudden
then,
you can enjoy
their stuff like every week, whereas I wouldn't normally. I remember getting a cake box from Gemma in Linton Kitchen.
Oh.
I never get to go to her cafe.
Yeah. I did. I got some cookies from her actually for the children. Like just a big box of raisin and oatmeal cookies. And they were just so good.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I would just to have them. Yeah. Oh God. It's one of those things now that you're kind of like, oh, that was fun. I'm like, also because it's pandemic, but
I know.
These little nuggets of happiness that you can kind of think about now that you're like, that was nice, that was a fun time.
I think if you can make the connections, though, still, like, to make the connections between food that's, I mean, all food is made by people, you know, whether it's like industrial produced or not, it all starts with a farmer ultimately. But we kind of make sure that it continues on that journey, like a handmade product the whole way through. And I think, yeah, keeping those connections is another thing that I've learned along the way that is important for our business, and it's important to try and join those dots between the customers and what they're eating.
Yeah. So what are your plans for the future? You've got two shops in Cambridge, Newnham and Mill Road. So are you planning on expanding anywhere in Cambridge or outside of Cambridge, or is there any kind of wild and wonderful plans that you've got, or you're just kind of going to keep going where you're at the moment?
No, I think consolidation of where we're at is really important now. With the second shop, I mean, I've always, since day one in Cambridge, I've always wanted to have a shop in Mill Road. So that was always part of the sort of 5 to 10 year plan. And so we're there now. And the next, I certainly see the next 5 years of not a huge amount of change, just hopefully lots of improvement.
Yeah.
Everyone's always learning, aren't they? So, and I've got massive lessons to learn about juggling the two sites and just all of the things that come with expanding your team.
The logistics.
Yeah. Communication. Mm-hmm. When everyone's in one building, it's really easy. When everyone's not, it's way more complicated. Mm. So there's loads of things, so loads of work to do. But it's all sort of under the radar type work.
But you've been having more events here, haven't you? We've came to Liz Young Modern Table. She had supper here, didn't she? Which was that night. Everything was just superb.
Yeah, it was really, really lovely. I think I really want to use the space to do more and more of that, particularly from my history of finding it so difficult to find premises in Cambridge when I first came.
Yeah, you can't. You know that. There's somebody that you can give the opportunity to.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And also, to another goal is just to have more different things going on.
It's kind of like a community hub, kind of, in a way.
Like particularly for food community. But, I mean, it doesn't necessarily need to stay like that. I mean, we could have a book club here. Everyone's having a nice time. I don't really mind what's going on.
Yeah. And you've had Node here, haven't you?
Yeah.
Which is Sam doing his No and Low drinks. So you've got an event coming up with him, actually.
Yeah, he's coming back on Sunday. And yeah, I hope that will continue, that Liz will come back, and that we've had Levante Kitchen doing a regular slot, so that people get to know these amazing businesses in Cambridge. And Sam works for you guys, but he's also making these amazing drinks. So for him to be able to kind of continue that side hustle through the experimental phases of it, and whatever happens with it, that he will have had a place to play.
Yeah,
you know,
we've all had those opportunities
in
our life where other people have been very generous and given that. We had that with Tim and Al from Fitzbillies, because Leo works at Fitzbillies, and they knew we'd bought the van and we were started Staking Honor, and they knew that we were doing that. And Leo worked there part-time. They let us, we had pop-ups. I don't know if you remember, we did pop-ups there.
I actually listened to your podcast with him, and I didn't know any of that because it all happened before I moved here.
Yeah, so Leo worked there with Rosie and Jack. So that's where he met Jack and Rosie. And then we bought the van. I'd had my eldest, Sydney, and whatnot. But we did two pop-ups there, I think, where Tim now just let us use the whole restaurant. And then Tim even came in and helped like the front of house. And again, just really generous, allowed us to do something to get our name out there a little bit. And I think you need to have people like that in your journey that are gonna give you that platform and that generosity so that you can grow. Because it's so tricky when you're starting out. And
it gives you confidence. Like what I found, because Alessandra from Levante, she's not a trained chef, and she was our first employee at Meadows. Mm-hmm. We know each other really well, and she's been making delicious salads and things for us, and then she said that she wanted to do her own thing. And you know, just to be able to say, look, I'm going to stand beside you and I'm going to pour wine for people, but I'm also going to be
Yeah,
this is great, it's going really well, you know. And it's it doesn't matter who's saying it, whether it's me or anyone else, but just to have somebody that you trust and you know by your side, like kind of reading the room, just making sure everything's going really well, that all the guests are really happy with an event that's got your name on it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I don't have money to invest in other food businesses, but I do have time and a space now that we can support people. So why not, you know? You always learn, like it's not completely selfless either. I always learn from working with other people. Like I learn loads from working with Liz, she's just so efficient and
professional. Yeah, she's on it. Liz is on it.
And you know, and just even working with Sam, like learning more about his process and what he's actually making.
Yeah.
You just always
just like get a wizard
back. Yeah.
Kind of making his potions, and then I love his cola herb syrup. I've spoken about this on the podcast like quite a few times, but I just love that. It's like one of my favourite things.
Yeah.
It's so delicate, it's so gentle, but it has, because it tastes like Coca-Cola, it has that familiar taste and again that nostalgic taste, and I just think it's lovely.
Yeah, no, he's
so elegant,
he's,
as well.
He's got a really great palate and also the mind to unpack these flavours and then put them back together again.
It is crazy to me.
Yeah, it is a like real skill.
Making a white wine that's not white, and like, and then it looks so like your head's looking at this glass thinking, well, that's a glass of, you know,
yeah,
whatever, Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc, and you're like, taste it. No, it's not. And it's even that just is, blows my mind.
No, it's amazing. I want to make sure that if somebody wants to be making and doing things like that, that they have an opportunity to do that, and there's like any barrier such as not having a place to do it can hopefully be removed.
Yeah, we're coming towards the end now, and I've got one question left, which is the best burger you've ever had. So do you like a burger?
I do like a burger, yeah.
When was it, where was it, what was in it? You can have more than one.
Yeah.
So,
Well, I mean, I know we're not meant to talk about the stigma on a burger, but it is a big, important part of my life in Cambridge.
Oh, that's
and
exciting.
I hope that if either of my children go into food and we'll be having this conversation with somebody in the future, that will be the nostalgia of their childhood with, you know, in Cambridge.
Mm.
And actually, it was one of the foods that made me feel like kind of at home in Cambridge when we first moved here, because I literally knew nobody here. So to first of all eat the burger and then also meet you guys on the vans, and it just made me feel like part of a food community that I wanted to contribute to when I was setting up Home Clothes and everything. So huge place in my heart. And also a cracking burger as well.
It's so sweet when people say that, like, you know, having that memory. It's not even about the burger really, but just having those memories of old coming down to the van or whatever it was in that time in their life. And I always think it's really moving, really, that people have those really lovely memories.
Yeah, and actually the other burger that I kind of have a like heartfelt attachment to is actually an Eddie Rocketts burger, but Eddie Rocketts burger circa 1996 to
was that in Dublin?
Yeah,
I've been there.
Yeah,
when I went to Dublin in 2003, early noughties with a friend of mine, and we went and ate there.
So Eddie Rocketts since then is not the same. I'm not sure what happened. I think it got franchised, or I'm not really sure.
I saw one in London once. Yeah. I was like, but it wasn't the same. Like, I remember the experience being different.
Yeah.
The one in Dublin.
So I used to get, so when I went to school in Dublin, and it was part of my kind of where we would go, like before we went to pub. So when we were like 15, 16, and we were allowed out, but we didn't know what to do with ourselves. We used to go to Eddie Rocketts, and we couldn't really afford burgers every time. But we used to go and get milkshakes and fries. But then we, you know, once I started earning a bit of cash,
upgraded
burgers. Yeah. And it was when I was in Edinburgh, I was at uni, I was still dating a guy who lived in Dublin. And so I would fly over every now and again for a weekend. And we'd always have these hectic weekends seeing everyone and sort of seeing each other. But then I would get the airport coach back to Dublin Airport from just outside in Eddie's. So we'd always
have a final farewell meal.
Like we'd make time, go like an hour before the bus. And it was always just like, sit down, have a burger, have a drink, have a chat about what had gone on over the weekend.
See you later.
Yeah, bye. Make a plan. It's like, when am I going to see next? Like, how many weeks? See you later. And off we go. So it was a really good burger compared to anything else, really. And also kind of felt a little bit more like it was not the food that we ate at home.
Yeah.
It was like more kind of like cool thing to eat, like go to Ed's.
Like an American kind of diner
style. And like, you know, we still don't have loads of chains in Ireland. Like the food industry in Ireland is quite a lot more simple because it's just a much smaller market. Like the population of the country is like 4 million people.
Mm. That's wild.
Yeah. So like we don't have the big chains there. So it did kind of feel like quite a unique thing.
Yeah.
So it's more of an attachment to
a time and a feeling and a place. But I think that's what food does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We were talking back about the comfort food or nostalgia. I love talking to people about food of their childhood because there's always somewhere there'll be a similarity. Or even when you just talk about food in general, there's going to be something that you say that someone's going to go, oh, yeah, I remember this. Yeah. Or there's that connection. And that's one of the reasons why I'm doing this podcast because I'm nosy. So I like to know, like, so what about you then?
Yeah.
But also I just love having that connection with people where you can talk about food and what you love and what you hate or whatever, all these things. It's just,
I think it is. I mean, like, we're both in the food business, but it's so much about people and the people that you meet and the people you work with and the suppliers that you buy from. And yeah, it is. The people business just as much as the food business.
It is. And I think giving people an experience that they will remember.
Yeah.
And that's in every which way, not just the food, but the service, the drinks, the everything.
Yeah.
And people leave feeling happy, full stomachs.
Yeah, and I think it is just, again, down to those fundamentals, like, you know, whether it's picking food out of the ground or just actually having conversations in real life, in 3D. You know, that's one of the reasons why I don't think my business really works online. Like, we do have a website, we do sell online. But one of the things that's really unique to Meadows is that, you know, the personal conversations and the service that people come for. I mean, that was something that really kept people of Newnham going throughout the pandemic. You know, we'd see people pretty much every day.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I imagine for a lot of people, because I know I was working at Grain Culture during the pandemic, one day a week, and I know that was, you know, one in, one out.
Yeah,
people would queue, and I know what that meant to lots of people. Yeah. And I imagine that Meadows was the same for some people. It was it's the only thing they did that day.
Yeah,
and just that connection with that one other person.
Yeah,
would like fill their cup for the rest of the day.
Yeah,
and I think that was really important for lots
and
of
it
people.
Wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just like people living alone, but, you know, we had young people who were away from home and like away from home for much longer than they expected that they would be. Like, even not necessarily students, but like people doing PhD were just like literally stranded because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
We became like their, you know, surrogate family because, you know, their actual family were like the other side of the Atlantic or, you know, wherever they were. But I think just that feeling of connection and that people kind of, even if you don't know them for life, that in that moment that they see you and they understand you and they want to take care of you, like, it's a huge part of food business, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's
amazing. Thank you so much for coming on. Mm-hmm. Let's have such a lovely conversation. Mm-hmm. I think we could just carry on.
Carry on. We'll lose the plot.
That's part two. We'll do part two. Thanks for your time and thanks for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me. It's really nice.
Oh, it's great.
Thank
so
you.
Thanks so much, Susanna.
Pleasure.
Well, there you go. Another great episode. Thanks so much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of Burger Bants. Just to let you know, we've had some incredible past guests on Series 1 and Series 2. So if you haven't yet had a listen, go and check those episodes out. If you fancy grabbing a burger this week, our vans are parking up in and around Cambridge. Head to our socials at Steak and Honour for our full pitch schedule. We also have a restaurant on Wheeler Street in central Cambridge, right next to the Corn Exchange, with seating and a banging selection of local beers. Plus, you can find us is serving at the Tivoli on Cheston Road 7 days a week. To stay up to date with all our news and offers, head to our website, steakandhonour.co.uk, and sign up to our newsletter.